You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the House of Representatives will vote tomorrow on impeaching Donald Trump again. Meanwhile, more than a dozen Capitol police are investigated for suspected involvement in the Capitol attack. Lawmakers are briefed on more potential attacks, including across the country in state capitals. And the threat was also inside the House. Republican lawmakers refuse to wear masks and have apparently created a potential super spreader event that has infected now three Democratic lawmakers that we know of. Trump administration now calls for a simpler vaccination metric, everyone over the age of 65. Mike Pompeo pushes the Iran to Al-Qaeda connection, supposedly, and designates Cuba a terrorist state. Trump reportedly considering a self-pardon. That was until his lawyers told him it could cost him in lawsuits. Acting DHS Chad Wolf resigns. In odd case of timing. The ACLU pushes Acting Attorney General Rosen to postpone three executions that are scheduled for this week. And Patriots coach Bill Belichick takes a pass on Trump's offer of the Medal of Freedom. Lastly, Sheldon Adelson, the anti-union billionaire and massive Trump donor, dies. All this and more on today's program. I should also say that later in the program, we are anticipating having Brendan Gudenschwager on. He is an independent journalist who was covering the Capitol attack the other day and was in the building. We hope to have him on the program later in the program. It is Tuesday, and as she is every day, Emma Vigeland is here. And Emma, I have to say, today it really struck me that I have been able now for over a week to say 2021 at the beginning of the intro of the show as opposed to 2020, and I'm very proud of myself.
Good job. Good job. It's the small wins.
Exactly.
In the year of 2021.
Exactly. We've got to count the it's the small things that have to keep us happy as we are winding our way through this this pandemic that we're all enjoying. And there is reports that the Trump administration is going to just simplify the metric on the vaccinations, 65 and older, make it simpler, get them out the door. There was a report in the Financial Times today that Pfizer seems to have found the capacity to make 500 million new doses, which I, complete speculation on my part, I think it's quite a coincidence that as a president who is about to be inaugurated in 8 days has thrown around the idea of a Defense Production Act order that it has encouraged the maker of at least one of the vaccines to find more capacity on their own to do this. We will see if that precludes it. I did see a report today that Biden is expecting more from his is unhappy with his team, his vaccination team, and wants to, they're hedging on the 100 million doses within the first 100 days. And we will talk about that later in the program. But of course, the story of the day is that tomorrow, we have today now, impeachment resolution has been released, and it will be voted upon tomorrow, is my understanding. Donald Trump came out today, gave a speech, I guess a press conference. I don't even know how to describe it, really.
Not a tweet.
No,
it is a little unnerving not to know what's rattling around in that man's brain. We just have to hear him talk, and then
I think we'll guess. But
simple. Yes.
Here is Donald Trump surprisingly coming out against impeachment. This is Donald Trump from outside the White House.
This impeachment is causing tremendous anger, and you're doing it. And it's really a terrible thing that they're doing. For Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to continue on this path, I think it's causing tremendous danger to our country, and it's causing tremendous anger. I want no violence. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
I mean, I'm sort of at a loss for words. Because there is not, as far as I know, there is not a word in the English that would capture the amount of gall that he's talking about, must have to be worried about violence and worried about danger, because there would be some measure of accountability. We're not talking about taking him to the gallows. We're talking about a vote to impeach him. It's at this point, it is up to the Republicans and up to Mitch McConnell if he is removed from office. Because of the timing, the Senate is out of session until the 19th. The Democrats can impeach him tomorrow, or they could impeach him later in the week in the House. He's impeached. They could send it to the Senate end of day tomorrow, theoretically. But because the Senate is not in session until the 19th, Mitch McConnell could decide not to deal with it, wait a day, he's got no other business perhaps, and we wait until the inauguration of Joe Biden, and the impeachment continues. There's a trial in the Senate under new majority leader Chuck Schumer, and Donald Trump would not be removed from office. So the idea that this is an incitement to violence, when we have already seen the violence, when we already know all the plans to attack capitals across the nation, where we have literally thousands of National Guards troop who are going to be stationed for the inauguration and presumably are on alert right now, is absurd. It is absurd.
Well, look what you're making us do.
Yeah, exactly. He incited violence for his own purposes, and now he's pretending to be against violence for his own purposes, aka self-preservation. He's hoping that the threat of violence, it could happen, I don't know, there could be some violence, will scare lawmakers and Democrats into not following through with this. And what does scare me is right now the caucus seems very united. They
got something like 218 co-sponsors, yes, of this resolution, I think, before the ink was dry on it.
Well, they had some defectors at first. I'm forgetting his name, but the representative from Oregon who, joins Lipinski as the most conservative Democrat. They're kind of a tandem. He had been saying that he wasn't in favor of it, but those voices kind of dwindled quickly because, look, I mean, it's human nature. The reality of it is that all of these lawmakers experience trauma based on being locked in safe rooms where now there's COVID. They were infected with COVID, Pramila Jayapal included, after there was an insurrection attempt and there were people trying to take them as hostages. I mean, beyond the political ramifications of impeachment, we need to do it because I think it's a smart political thing to do. It's also the right thing to do to hold this kind of behavior to account. There's an emotional element for the lawmakers as well. They were scared, rightfully so.
And I think the drip, drip, drip of footage and reporting that has come out in the wake of all of this. I mean, I think it's taken a couple of days, but there's now footage of a police officer being dragged by the foot and dragged downstairs and punched and beaten.
A video of a police officer donning a red MAGA hat as well.
And then we have
Capitol Police.
The new information that the Capitol Police have suspended several members of their force. They're investigating over a dozen members of their force for potentially not only showing some measure of messages of support for the rally that preceded the attack, but that there had been inappropriate images of President-elect Joe Biden on their social media account, et cetera. And so there's concern. There is some concern that maybe there was some, I don't want to say inside job here, but that there was like at least at the very least some sympathetic members of the Capitol Police Force who helped. I mean, this is a very serious situation.
And it's a broader problem because police are just more sympathetic to right wingers than like you can not make it as insidious as an inside job and talk about the structural problem of policing in this country, which is that it's sympathetic to and often comprised of people with white supremacist leanings far too often, and also just sympathetic to right-wing authoritarianism in general.
It's fascinating, and we're going to see we're going to take a break here in a moment, but we're going to play a lot of footage today, not a lot of footage, but a couple of clips of conservatives, Republicans, basically talking about this dynamic of aggrievement that we don't want to commit any violence. And of course, we're not going to do it. It's just like people of our ilk are going to commit violence if you insist on holding us to account for the violence that we've already committed. This dynamic, I want to make this clear. This is not an invention of Donald Trump. I think it was maybe 10 years ago. I was on a panel with Whitman. She was the former EPA secretary under George W. Bush. And I think she was also at one point New Jersey governor, if I remember correctly. She was making the case that the reason why conservatives wouldn't accept the idea that global warming could be real is because liberals pushed it too much. This dynamic of your insistence on accountability, your insistence on believing facts is what's driving us to not believe facts or what's driving us to commit violence. This is like the way that with all due respect to my 7-year-old son, small children behave.
Yep.
And the idea of I have no agency. I only react to your insistence that we function the way that you're supposed to function in a civilized society is enough to make me not act like you're supposed to act in a civilized society. This is not a legitimate counter argument to anything. It's not legitimate just in and of itself, and it certainly should not be something that drives the decision making by adults in this country.
Well, because it's essentially a threat, right? And in a lot of ways, it's how like an abusive husband would behave, right? Like, well, I committed violence before, and if you hold me to account, you
call
don't
the
know.
Cops. Yeah, who knows what I
you don't know what's going to happen.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. In the meantime, I mentioned my 7-year-old son. He's been reluctant as of late to eat breakfast. And there is literally one thing that I can get him to eat.
Magic spoon.
That's right.
I stepped on your...
You stepped on my big reveal.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You know, kids love cereal. I loved cereal when I was a kid. You know, they had that sugary goodness, all the different flavors, the chocolate, the fruity, the blueberry, the frosted. The problem is, of course, it was full of junk and a ton of sugar. And my whole thing now is I want as little sugar as possible, not just for me, but for my kids. And Magic Spoon has all the amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. Magic Spoon is a cereal company. It's discovered a way to recreate your favorite childhood cereals with 0 grams of sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. And now, because so many of you have asked, you can finally build your very own custom variety box. You get 4 packages of cereal in a box. Now, Emma, you can look over there. As you can see, I did not get a variety because my favorite is cinnamon. I get all cinnamon, but that's all right. You don't have
all
to be
four
like me.
Cinnamon?
I did, yeah. Although I actually got 2 boxes. I get 1 peanut butter in each of the boxes. But,
yeah. No, it's something I would do. I get it.
You can choose from the best-selling cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry flavors, plus brand new flavors, including peanut butter and cinnamon. Now, it's not on the copy, and I'm not probably not even supposed to say this, but they had a brief run of gingerbread, and I am not allowed to eat any of that because that is Saul's favorite. And I got to say, it's really good. Hopefully they'll bring that back, but they cycle through seasonal flavors. It's keto friendly. It's gluten free. It's grain free. It's soy free. It's low carb and it's GMO free. It is honestly, it's delicious. Throughout the day, I will graze on a little bit of Magic Spoon, a little cup. I know I'll eat it dry. I don't care. MagicSpoon.com/majority report. You can grab a variety pack today and try it. Be sure to use our promo code Majority Report at checkout. Save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product. It's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they refund your money. No questions asked. That's MagicSpoon.com/majority report. Use the code Majority Report to save $5 off. Thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring the podcast and, frankly, my breakfast. And, frankly, half of the meal I eat all day now. I just like I'm full on just Magic Spoon. Oh, but the only other thing, and I literally just had one, hours ago. This episode is also sponsored by Monk Pack. Again, fulfills my no sugar pledge to myself. They make snacks that taste like our favorite sugary treats, but with 1 gram of sugar or less. Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars contain 2 to 3 grams of net carbs. They're only 150 calories. They come in delicious flavors like sea salt, dark chocolate, pecan almond, which happens to be my favorite, peanut, dark chocolate. They are keto friendly. They are gluten free. They are plant-based and they are non-GMO. I literally just had one this morning. I was trying to save it for the read, but it didn't work out. But
you just couldn't help yourself.
No, they're delicious. And, you know, I like some nuts and seeds. It gets me going. And I feel good about giving it to my kids, too. I mean, this is the thing. It's like, you know, I'm trying to find food, snack food that I can give to my kids, that I can take myself, that doesn't have a lot of sugar in it, that are basically, you know, that are healthy and more nuts and seeds, good, real food, not processed. They're delicious. They're satisfying. They provide you energy. And they have this thing called allulose, which apparently exists in small amounts in like maple syrup and like raisins and figs. Mm. I don't know. It's good though. Try it for yourself and you'll see we have a special deal for our listeners. You get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com, entering our code Majority Report at checkout. And Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. To get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's Monk, M-U-N-K, Pack, PACK.com. Select any product, then enter the code Majority Report at checkout. Save 20% off your purchase. That's nuts. Monkpack.com. delicious, nutritious food you can count on. We thank them for sponsoring this podcast, and something I eat on a regular basis now. So, and speaking of a longtime sponsor of this program, I mentioned this yesterday, but I convinced somebody already to get their Dob kit too.
Oh, nice!
Yes,
who'd you convince?
Oh, a buddy of mine. Sometimes I don't want to talk out of town.
All right,
but somebody's like, I need one of those. I'm getting one right now. Harry's team combined a simple ergonomic design with 5 sharp blades. That's what the Harry's razor is all about. They source their steel from Sweden. They manufacture their blades in their own factory in Germany. They cut out the middleman. They ship it directly to you. You save money. You save a trip to the store. You don't have to go. I don't know if you've ever been aware of this, but men's razors anyways, they lock them behind the case because they're like these like buffy things that...
Yeah. They do that for women's razors too.
It's ridiculous.
It's annoying.
And then they package them in these like, I don't know, it's like the Superman ice fortress type of thing. But you can start the new year with some savings. New customers can redeem a Harry's trial set for just $3 when you go to harrys.com/majority. Plus, Harry stands by the quality of their blades so much they have 100% money-back guarantee on harrys.com. Look, I'm not going to promise. I already made this clear yesterday. I'm not going to until this thing is over, I'm probably not going to shave. Certainly any more than I already have. Yeah, like I'm down to like once, maybe twice a week now.
Okay. All right.
But
I get it. It's a pain.
But I'm up in my game with the Dob kit that I'm getting from them, or whatever they call it, the toiletry kit, because I'm not going to carry around my junk in a plastic bag anymore. Because I got to move around a lot with the kids and stuff like that. So
No plastic bag.
But you can go to Harry's right now, and if you have never tried Harry's before, now is the time. They have a special offer for listeners of my show. New customers can get a Harry's starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/majority. You'll get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, travel color. I also got to say, the blade is a trimmer blade, which is important for me. I've got some nostril challenges.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, I probably didn't need to tell you that. Well, for just $3. $3 for a starter set. 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel color, $3. Get everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. Go to harrys.com/majority to claim your offer. Check it out now. All right, let's get into this. While we're talking about impeachment, the polling on this, and I don't think it's terribly relevant, frankly, we saw the polling go way up as soon as the Democrats started impeaching last time. And I think the polling is, you know, to a certain extent, it's largely irrelevant in the context of this equation. There is something that we simply cannot tolerate as a society if we send the message that this is okay, and that as long as you don't threaten us anymore, we won't hold anybody to account. We are just inviting more of this moving forward. And
polling isn't static, let me just say.
Exactly.
You can influence it,
exactly,
as we did with the first impeachment. Democrats did.
We're going to play a series of clips of right wingers saying like, oh, you better not impeach. It's going to make people angry. I mean, hello. There seems to be some anger out there right now. And what we need to do as a society is indicate what is an appropriate way to express that anger. Here we have, however, in Bloomberg, and this is just like another impetus. And this has more to do, it seems to me, with the ability for Democrats to do two things. One, to pass and promote and to, I guess, initiate good policy, but also good politics. And that is that there is a force pushing against Democrats, which Republicans have all but abandoned at this point because just their agenda dovetails quite nicely with these people. Bloomberg reports that former Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle and former Senate leader Trent Lott, they actually had a 50-50 split during the late 90s, mid-90s. Similar situation. Bill Clinton was the president. Al Gore presided over the Senate. So they had worked out, because you've got to negotiate. How many people do we have on a committee, et cetera, et cetera. Former Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle warned his party against impeaching President Donald Trump for inciting the mob attack on the Capitol, arguing that even a delayed Senate trial risks impending urgent action President-elect Joe Biden must take to bolster the economy and combat the COVID-19 pandemic. An impeachment mechanism is just not the right course at all if they want to hold the president accountable, Daschle said at a forum on Monday with Trent Lott, held by the Bipartisan Policy Center. First off, a couple of points in this. One is that even with the House run by Newt Gingrich back in the 90s, which was in many respects the prototype for the Republican Party we see today, in a very specific way, the whole thing where it's like you get overly aggressive and you call Democrats Democrat because you've tested with Frank Luntz that it reminds people of the word rat. That's why they do this, and that's where it came from, that era. The Senate hadn't quite been infected by this Republican just completely off the rails. Never mind their policy set, but the way that they did their politics. Trent Lott had to resign in the early aughts from Senate Majority Leader because he spoke at a birthday party for Strom Thurmond, who was at that time well into his 90s, still in the Senate. He was in, I think it was in the 40s, a Dixiecrat candidate who was running on a platform of segregation. So Trent Lott's at the birthday party. We all love you, Strom Thurmond. We all know this would have been a better country had you won the presidency. Guys running on a segregation platform.
Yeah, also Joe Biden eulogized Strom Thurmond.
Indeed.
Let's just point that out.
That's true. But Trent Lott was called for that comment. His resignation was called for. Now, there's a lot of people who think that Bill Frist had something to do with that. He was the one who was waiting in the wings to take over from Trent Lott, and that this was promoted by right wingers who want to get Trent Lott out because what had happened in the House in terms of Republicans was happening in the Senate. And Trent Lott was a little bit too respectful of bipartisanship at that time. That is one of the stories. We are so far from that era of Senate comedy, not comedy, haha, but comedy in terms
comedy
of
with a T.
Collegiality.
Yes.
Which is why this is just a bizarre thing that Tom Daschle's talking about, you know, that there is legislation that's going to get 10 Republican votes in the Senate. There is not legislation that's going to get 10 Republican votes in the Senate. I'm sorry. There is none. Certainly not on any big spending bills. There's just no way. There's nothing for them to bring to the American public. They've already gotten the tax cuts that they want.
Yeah.
There is, you know, other than like cuts on Social Security or whatever, there's nothing for the Republicans in terms of spending to deal with COVID. That's all going to have to happen through reconciliation, which requires only a simple majority and is not subject to a filibuster by the Republicans. And we will talk more about the dynamics of reconciliation. Now, Tom Daschle surely knows this. Trent Lott surely knows this. They both are lobbyists and advisors to politicians. So this is really just like, we have a problem. Nobody's listening to Trent Lott anyways.
No.
But we have a problem with in Democratic politics. And just broadly speaking, because Democrats also represent the center now, as well as the left and the center left, that when you see the word bipartisan, more often than not, much more often than not, it is basically moneyed interests trying to make sure that we get into a situation where there is as little change as possible. You can go ask your mortgage broker right now. What do you feel about the potential of, like, what happened to mortgage rates after the Democrats won in Georgia? It was starting to creep up because the idea is going to be there's going to be a lot of money that's going to be spent. And That's going to make treasury bills less enticing. So they're going to have to raise rates. I mean, the idea of static, of nothing happening, is good for money, for big and when you have people like Daschle and Trent Lott, who are lobbying these people, this is what you're going to get. And fortunately, the Democrats don't seem to be listening to this type of rhetoric anymore. That they, or at least in this moment, because like you pointed out, this is something that's very personal for them, because they were stuck in that building as cops were being beaten to death, as cops were being dragged out, as people are smashing windows, as people walking around with zip ties, as they're building a noose and a gallows out front. I mean, this is nuts. And here is your buddy Daryl Issa on Fox Business News talking about how Democrats are overplaying their hand if they think they can hold people to account for this.
We need to go to Daryl Issa for strategy discussions.
Here he is with Maria Bartiromo.
Here that an impeachment trial wouldn't begin until 1 o'clock on January 20th after the president is a former president. So a trial would never actually happen. So what is this then? Is this for show? Is this so that he won't run again? If the reality of it with 9 days left, that it actually can't happen in terms of a trial?
Well, it's probably similar to shutting off the Twitter feed of somebody after his presidency is essentially over. It's kicking when he's down. It's getting rid of 88 million people who follow and listen to the president. There's no question at all that I think the liberals saw an opportunity, a misstep by the president, that they're going to overplay, and they're overplaying it as we speak. They're overplaying a lot of things, including the death of these people on Capitol Hill. It was a terrible event. Terrible things. People need to be punished. And of course, they're trying to use it to imply that there's only one side that has violence, and completely ignoring all of last year and the unchecked violence from the left.
So Daryl Issa is just very concerned about the overplaying and the dramatization and the political usage of deaths of people.
Can you imagine also like sort Which of equating the Twitter followership of somebody as some type of like civic right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But the point is that Daryl Issa was one of the key Republicans in the Benghazi hearings.
Yes.
Tens of Benghazi hearings. Four people died in Benghazi, four Americans. Five Americans died in the Capitol assault. He's concerned about overplaying something.
Donald Trump had a misstep. He had a misstep. He accidentally stumbled into promoting the seizure of the Capitol building and the stringing up of the vice president who would not overrule
Trump. Accidentally said
election.
Irregardless. It was a misstep.
It was a misstep.
And then people rioted. And again, like, yeah, you point out the Twitter following. The false equivalence that seems to be what Republicans are going with and Fox News is going with right now, but also like the weird concern for Trump's personal feelings, right? So he says they're kicking him when he's down.
Yeah.
This is like when Ainsley Earhart was most concerned about Mike Pence and Trump's fractured relationship. Like, this isn't Days of Our Lives. This is people. These are the most powerful people in the country. I'm not really concerned about Trump's feelings about his Twitter account. That's a separate issue. What I am concerned about is the rise of fascism in the country, encouraged by the president, and holding him to account for that. Those are the big issues. Twitter's bigger, I guess.
Here is Brian Kilmeade from Fox News and Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
This morning, doing the same work. There's obviously been a set of talking points that have gone out to Trump TV, to all of the remaining Trumpistas. And that is, of course, that this is only going to divide us. The idea that you would hold people to account for storming the Capitol and killing people is only going to be divisive. It's the holding to account that's divisive. Continue. Let's play this. Clip number three.
I think if you want to unite the country, it's not the right way to go.
There's no doubt about it. You're 100% right. It is not the way to go. We don't care about what Nancy Pelosi thinks about the President of the United States. When is she going to understand
that? Well, that's the motivation.
We don't care. Can somebody put the country first? Right. At some point, can we stop the intramural games? It's an embarrassment. Right. It's inflaming the entire population.
We need vaccines. We need to reopen. Yeah. That's what we need to focus on.
What other proof do they need? You saw what happened. Why would you get, at the very least, even though everyone condemns it, you have to acknowledge it. The anger is off the charts. And you see it in the small delis and the restaurants that are intense and the anger that people have on every single level.
Just go on Twitter, go on Instagram, read some of the comments under Democrats or under Republicans on both sides.
If your account's not frozen. Speaking of that.
Wait, what? What does he say there at the end? The idea, I mean, it sounds to me like he's just forgiving the whole thing. And I love the idea. It's like all of these things that are wrong with our government. Well, I got news for you. Who's been controlling this? Where were you weeks ago, months ago, talking about the failure to do the things like the vaccine and whatnot? But this idea that somehow it is always when Democrats get elected, the unity is always their responsibility. And the idea that that on some level, holding these people to account, holding Donald Trump to account, is going to exacerbate. Like, what happens after that? Like, how does that exact? What is supposed to happen after that? Like, where do we? Like, on this one, we turn it up to 11. Like, I don't understand. We're divided. That's just the reality of this. And I think, you know, to the credit of the Democrats, there seems to be an acknowledgement and an understanding of this, that there is no fixing this until we account for it.
Yeah. And again, I keep repeating that I think part of what a lot of people are underestimating is because it personally affected them and they personally experienced it, which isn't the best praise for the Democrats, because hopefully they could just empathize with other things and then hold Republicans accountable for the harm they cause outside of the halls of Congress. But still, this is the right thing that they're doing, and we should praise them for it. But kill me, that was one of his most infuriating moments, because in the Republican world, Trump is the ultimate alpha male. We'll get to that clip eventually, right? Mm-hmm. He's the ultimate macho dude, but yet he has no agency. He has no responsibility for anything in the country, no responsibility for the divisiveness that they cite as the president of the United States, no responsibility for the lack of vaccine distribution that Kilmeade suddenly cares about and Ainsley Earhart are suddenly really, really concerned about. He's not responsible for any of it. It's always the left's divisiveness, but only when they're in power. You're worried about uniting the country. Your guy's Donald Trump. He calls everybody names. He rips the country apart on racial lines and incited an insurrection. So when you want to talk about divisiveness, you have to do that first.
Can we say what's needed now is simple, is that all that they said about the election being stolen were lies? Because frankly, if a landslide was overturned, like what that calls for in a population is pretty severe. And until those lies are walked back and admitted for the lies they were, there's going to be a severe problem about anger in this country.
That is exactly.
Never gonna lie.
If you want to unify this country, and you have a platform like Brian Kilmeade, or you have one like Daryl Issa, you get on there and say, "Hey, you've been fed an entire meal of lies. The election wasn't stolen. We were wrong. We were wrong to push it day in, day out. Wrong to push this. The president's wrong. And stand down." And until they start to push that message 24/7, even remotely close to the message that they pushed building up to the election and after the election, they have no standing whatsoever. And I want to just add this too.
Yeah.
While they are calling for all this unity, and while they're calling for all the government to do something, we now have three Democratic lawmakers who contracted COVID during the lockdown. Do we have a clip? And this is not, this was predicted. On the day of the lockdown, Congress people were put into secure rooms. Here is a video of Lisa Rochester. I think she's from what, Delaware? Yes. Punchbowl News. Lisa Rochester, I think a congresswoman from Delaware, she's trying to hand out masks in this room, in this closed room that people are in for hours. Play this clip. Are literally laughing at her.
I mean, and
mocking her.
Pramila Jayapal wrote about this too. I mean,
they are mocking her.
Right.
And since that time, there have been three Democratic, now we're up to three Democratic congresspeople who were in that space who have now contracted COVID. Bonnie Watson Coleman of New Jersey, who is 75 years old, cancer survivor. Pramila Jayapal, and now the latest is Brad Schneider from Illinois. And they were warned on Sunday of this because apparently some person in Congress went to the congressional doctor and said, I have COVID. And I was in that room and I wasn't wearing a mask. We don't know who that person was. You can bet your bottom dollar there are other lawmakers who are not reporting that they have COVID because they were in there without a mask, because it's part of their sort of like, I don't know, their cultural identification that they are in some way incapable of catching COVID, that it's not real. Reed, you have Pramila Jayapal.
Yeah, so I mean, Pramila Jayapal, one of the 10 most progressive lawmakers in Congress, her statement on her site talks about how Dr. Brian Monahan, the attending physician of the United States Congress, advised representatives and congressional staff on Sunday that those in the secured room could have been exposed to another occupant with coronavirus infection. The duration in the room was multiple hours, and several Republicans not only cruelly refused to wear a mask, but mocked colleagues and staff who offered them. I mean, we see that in the video there, but that's what Pramila Jayapal is talking about, that. And she's asking for fines levied on every single member who refuses to wear a mask in the Capitol, which should be obvious. One of the Democratic or one of the lawmakers who contracted COVID as a cancer survivor is in her 70s. But they laugh. They laugh because I don't know. They're on team cool. Like in high school, they wouldn't have had a Rolly backpack. They would have had the cool ones. Like that's what they act like. That's what they act like. It's some sort of fashion statement or some sort of cultural identifier where they get to be a part of the cool clique, the plastic.
How do you have unity without these people coming out and saying, I'm sorry, I deliberately behaved in a way that ended up giving people, you know,
my colleagues
COVID. I mean, it's just
people I know personally.
This is sociopathic behavior. Yep. I'm sorry. I mean, it is definitionally sociopathic behavior. And it's enhanced. The sociopathy is even enhanced by the fact that now they know that they could give it to people, that they had it and they could give it to people. The first instance of refusing and mocking the idea of wearing a mask is demented. But then to realize that you actually caused the contraction of this extremely dangerous virus for people age 75, for cancer survivors, and say nothing publicly. I mean, who knows? Maybe they said nothing privately. I suspect they didn't.
Yeah, it's the mindset of an authoritarian. It's the mindset of somebody who really doesn't care about other people and would rather bow their heads and not do the brave thing. And that's entirely consistent with the same lawmakers who went along in lockstep with a bully of a president, Donald Trump.
And we should say one of the other things that's embedded in the impeachment resolution is the citing of the 14th Amendment, third clause, I think it is, of the 14th Amendment, which was a Reconstruction era clause that it did not cite the Civil War, but it said generally, people who have taken an oath to the Constitution. So this is not about Confederate soldiers. It is about the leaders who literally take an oath to the Constitution, lawmakers, and attempt to participate or participate in an insurrection. They should be banned from an elected position in the House of Representatives or in the Senate or the presidency for that matter. And this is part of, this is cited in the impeachment resolution, specifically in terms of Donald Trump, obviously. But there's also talk that maybe this must be, there must be an attempt. I think Cori Bush introduced something to this effect. I don't know if it cited the 14th Amendment, to punish and to essentially eject folks like Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and the others who participated in promoting what they knew was a complete lie, designate, you know, in an attempt to build anger and ultimately their own political power. And it just, they just miscalculated. I was mixing up this stuff to make a bomb and it blew up in my face. That's basically what happened. And the idea that they can just go about their business now as if, like, I mean, where does it go? Like, where, like, is there any reason to believe that as they move forward in their political careers, they're going to show some measure of remorse? They can't. It is contrary to their political fortunes. They will continue on this. And if they get away with this without any accountability, it's simply going to be part of their political mystique, and they're going to build on.
Yeah, there's no accountability from their voters, which is it's not the bug, it's the feature. So there has to be accountability from within. There is no other option.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Brendan Guttenswager. He is an independent reporter. He was on the scene. I don't think he got too far into the Capitol, but he was there videotaping the protest. We're going to get his perspective on these things when we come back. And after we talk to him, too, we should just touch on what Mike Pompeo, if we don't get to it today, we'll get to it tomorrow, is trying to do out the door again. To further his political fortunes. And it's going to come at the cost of increasing the chances of war in this country. Hopefully he's not successful, but we will see. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Brendan Guttenswager. Welcome back. I think we've got, do we have Brendan?
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Brendan, we can't see you.
One second. I'm trying to get this video started.
Here we go. Brendan is an independent reporter. He travels around the country capturing original videos at rallies, at protests, breaking news, and more in the U.S. Brent, video camera going for video.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm trying to get the camera set here. It looks like the audio is working fine, just not the video here.
Well, Brendan, don't worry about the camera. So tell us, just give us a sense of like where you were and when during the on Wednesday.
Yeah, so I had been there pretty much throughout the day. I started early in the day covering over at the Ellipse, where Trump had been holding that rally, and I just continued through and followed as they then walked along Constitution Avenue, made their way over towards the Capitol, and then obviously everything that went on there, I just continued covering throughout the afternoon.
All right, Brendan, so just give us like a little bit of TikTok. So Donald Trump is on the stage. He leaves the stage. What happens then? Is it immediately people start to march to the Capitol?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty quickly after. Pretty much once he had said, we're going to walk down to the Capitol, there were some people that got started right then and there, others that waited till he had finished and then walked over there. So, I got there just about 1 o'clock and already things were getting very, very tense there and heated just right off the bat.
Did you have a sense as you were walking over with these other folks that they like what their plan was? Did they have a sense what their plan was?
Yeah, that was one thing that shocked me a lot, is that it didn't seem like it was as organized as some of the previous protests had been there in D.C. At other times when they had organizations coming there and saying, we're going to meet at Freedom Plaza or we're going to meet at the National Mall. They had a stage already set up. They had speakers in mind that were already planned ahead. And in this case, they pretty much just arrived at the Capitol building and everybody was just there. And it was kind of just like a free for all when they first arrived. And I think that may have been part of what led to so much of the chaos and unrest right off the bat there. Because, at other times you at least had somebody sort of leading the group, somebody there to kind of, with a megaphone or whatever, kind of directing people. And in this case, it really wasn't. Everybody had still been coming off of the Donald Trump speech over at the Ellipse. And because that went past 1 p.m., a lot of the main organizers hadn't already made their way over to the Capitol to start getting set up there. And so the crowds that were arriving were just there and trying to figure out what they wanted to do. And and it very, very quickly got extremely rowdy there.
Wow. So there was just basically a vacuum and it was filled by those people who wanted to get aggressive. And so then, all right, tell us what happened then. I mean, people start to, what did you see?
So, yeah, basically it started with very loud chants and people that were attempting to push back against the police. There were a lot of barricades. Small barricades, not like the main large fences that you're seeing up there now, those got very quickly pushed to the side. There were a few that police tried to hold back and like keep in place. People pushed back against those. People very quickly then pepper spray and mace were deployed, and it just started to be these clashes between the Trump supporters and the police. A lot of people would gather into groups to try to just physically push against the police, use just like sheer manpower to try to push back against them. In a few cases that did actually work and they were able to push what had been a barricade further out closer to the building. And eventually the police had to retreat all the way back to the building. As that went on for about an hour, shortly after 2 p.m., they pushed them back all the way to the building itself. And then, as everybody knows now, we're able to break inside and continue through there.
Were there protesters who were saying, hey, stop, what are you guys doing? Like, was there some type of dissension about what was going on, or was everybody, just all in on this?
It did seem like there was a little bit of confusion there. People that weren't, definitely people that didn't want there to be violence and were not happy seeing the direct clashes with police. There were a lot of people there that seemed to try to reason with police and try to talk with them and basically say, stand down, we don't want to hurt you, but we need you to move aside. I did see a lot of that. So people that weren't calling for direct violence against the police basically said, we're still not going to accept having them here blocking us. And, and so they tried to do that in order to just minimize physical harm. That being said, there was still a lot of physical harm and a lot of that that went on. It really seemed like there was just like a hodgepodge of mentalities and people there, because I saw just your average everyday Trump rally goers that, you know, I could certainly never see them throwing a Molotov cocktail or anything like that. And then also people that were taking baseball bats right to the police riot shields, and people that were just actively right there on the front line. So it was a really wide variety in that crowd.
But to be clear, the variety was how much violence should we use in this process? I mean, what people don't seem to understand is that, like, when there are protests, and there are protests in Congress, it happens all the time, but people literally, like, orderly walk through, they go through the metal detectors, they walk in, they quietly go to where they're going, and then they protest. Like, that's the way they did it when they occupied Nancy Pelosi's office or these other things. Like, the protests are there. They are demonstrations, and that is, you know, civil disobedience. And then they're taken away. Sometimes they're arrested. This was, they're going in there regardless.
Yeah. And that was something that was very different from pretty much every other, you know, Capitol protest that you can think of, is that really it was fully breached, that ultimately anybody could have walked in with anything. You know, we're in a sense lucky that there wasn't significantly more that went on in terms of damage to the building, because, yeah, people had free run of the place, free ability to go in and out there and, you know, and essentially do whatever they wanted there. I do believe that there were some so far back in the crowd, because the crowd outside was tens of thousands. Some in the far back probably weren't even aware as the Capitol was being breached that that's what was happening, because it was just such a large crowd. But certainly anybody near the front that could hear the cheers and see the crowds surging forward would have been able to see. And and a lot of people chose to hold back, but kind of support from the outside, other people actively pushing forward inside, and then still others at the very front lines that were actively pushing back against the police and trying to, actually allow for the security to go down on the Capitol. I think I just got the video working, by the way.
Oh, there you go. All right. So let me ask you this. Were you afraid? Were you frightened in any way?
Yeah. I mean, there were times I was, just in general with any of these riot zones, when there's so much tear gas flying around, things getting thrown in the air, and especially being someone that tends to film closer to the front lines there. You're always concerned that there's going to be something that hits you, somebody that, especially when I saw the baseball bat swinging, I was worried that at some point that was just going to get kind of like thrown off in the wrong direction, could hit me in the head.
How many baseball bats were there? I mean, were there a lot of people who were basically, you go with a baseball bat to a protest, you're armed as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you're bringing a weapon anyways. I've been to a lot of protests. I've been to a lot of anti-war protests, BLM protests. You don't see generally people coming with baseball bats in the middle of the day anyways. How many people were there with baseball bats, or what other weapons did you see?
Probably about a dozen that I could see with the baseball bats, although there could have been more in other parts of the crowd just because it was so large and hard to get a grasp on it all. I saw that a lot of pepper spray and mace. People had those on them. A few tasers as well. I'm sorry, what?
The people who were basically clamoring to, they had the tasers. They had the pepper spray.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of the Trump supporters, that crowd had those indeed. Yeah.
Wow. And so how far into the building did you follow these people, or could you get in?
Yeah, so they had stormed on that west side, and I basically just saw the beginning parts there in the hallway, that initial corridor that goes along that side of the building. I didn't go following people into some of the offices because they were basically trying to find individual legislators' offices, in particular Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They went on kind of searching for that. I didn't follow there, although I did follow to see them in the Capitol Rotunda, as well as just some of the corridors, some of the hallways, and then eventually just kind of monitoring over by the doors to see what was happening, because there were hundreds of people storming inside the building. But I wondered, like, were police still trying to actively prevent more from coming in? Were they just letting people in? And what I saw was kind of a mix, that they were initially trying to stop people from coming in, and they really were trying to barricade those doors shut. But just the sheer amount of the crowd, and then especially once you had Trump supporters already inside, that then allowed people to come from both sides, from the outside and from the inside, to where these doors were blocked by the police. At that point, the police just got overwhelmed and moved aside and just let people come in.
How did you know that they were looking for Nancy Pelosi's office and Chuck Schumer's office?
Some of them had been saying so even prior to all of this in the days leading up to the event. But on the day of the event, too, saying, you know, let's storm the Capitol. Let's find Nancy Pelosi's office. They didn't really state what they wanted to do. I didn't in particular hear anybody saying they were trying to find her specifically, but they were looking for her office. Unclear what the ambitions were there. I do know now that there were reports that a laptop was taken out of the office. So that's something that they'll probably be investigating and see what was on that, what kind of data there. But yeah.
Did you see when they were building the gallows?
No. So that actually most likely took place after they had already breached the innermost Capitol Police line and were then rushing up onto the Capitol lawn. Because I saw the images of that afterward, and it appeared to have been brought after I had already been way over by the front. So I wasn't in that area to see that, but I did see the images afterward.
And when you were inside the Capitol, in the rotunda or in the front hallway there, were there people who were going like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be in here? Or like, what was the attitude?
A lot of people were just saying, this is our house. This is, you know, a place that we have a right to be. It seemed to be a lot of the same attitude in that moment as previous Capitol protests, like the ones that had occupied Nancy Pelosi's office, the Sunrise Movement, et cetera. It was that same kind of attitude of, this is our house, so we have a right to be here, except that it was so many more people, and they basically had free run of the place, and there was really no...
Like with the Sunrise Movement occupation of Nancy Pelosi, like I say, they went through the metal detectors,
yes,
walked quietly up to the office, and they sat down being prepared to be taken out by police. I mean, that's what you do for a protest. Like, you show, like, I'm willing to, this is what civil disobedience is. I'm basically willing to subject myself to the authority of the state as a way of showing the hypocrisy of the state or whatever. This seems to me to be very different. We just have about a minute left. Was there anything else that struck you that was, particular, you know, something we haven't talked about yet?
I just thought it was fascinating how quickly the police were overwhelmed, how they really didn't seem to have any cohesive plan in place once people were there inside the building. Because I was very concerned once I saw people storming into the building that you were going to end up with a situation where they're going to be live rounds fired off inside the building, which did end up happening in some parts of the Capitol, as we now know. Thankfully, not against more people, because it could have been very, very bad. But even just like tear gassing inside the building, I had concerns that you were going to be seeing the halls of Congress filled with tear gas. And so I don't know if that is part of why they stood down against trying to fight back against people inside the building, if it was just an attempt to minimize damage to the building, because it was a very, you know, unruly crowd moving through there at many times. And all that, it was just so fascinating to see that unfold, given everything that's happened in the past year and just the way that police have responded in other instances. I was shocked that a building that most people would have assumed was one of the most secure in all of Washington, D.C., was actually remarkably not so. And you know, this really went on. I am surprised there weren't more injuries or and deaths from it. And I hate to say that, but just given how volatile the whole situation was and, you know, the anger and all that in the air, it is a very, very unique situation. And
Somebody who'd been to so many protests, to see that a little amount of police presence is pretty shocking. Brendan Guttenschwager, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, that does it for us today. We will be back tomorrow. Obviously, big day. They're going to impeach the president again. and if there's ever been a president that maybe deserved two impeachments, Donald Trump.
Probably.
Always liking to be a superlative. All right. We will see you tomorrow. For those of you sticking around, we will see you right now. We still got to talk about Mike Pompeo. We'll probably maybe touch on that. We'll touch that in the fun half. I mean, for Pompeo, it's all there. There's just like this sort of, it's almost like one of those things where it's like, you know, where they say, I want to say Black Friday, but it's really more like a situation where, you know, those events that they have, like, you've got 45 minutes in this supermarket, grab everything you can and put it in your cart. And on some level, it just feels like everybody, you've got all of these like Republican lawmakers and some of these Republican cabinet officials who are just like, I'm going to get as much as I can that can help me in 2024 as possible. And that's what Mike Pompeo is doing on his end. I'm going to show that I am an Iran war, you know, hawk, that that I am a Cuba hawk. I'm going to, and if I can create mayhem for the incoming presidency, I'll certainly do that. And in the case of Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and these others, it's like, I don't care what,
I'm anti-democracy. Well, I'm not above being a complete, hack for MAGA loyalists, despite the fact that I'm in the Senate. I mean, I feel like we haven't touched on this enough, how Trump has made some of these senators behave as if they're more House-like. Do you know what I mean? Like, more beholden.
That's what happened. That's what I was talking about with Trent Lott.
Yeah.
That, in the wake of 9/11, and not just because of 9/11, just because it takes a certain amount of time, you had the phenomenon like the House version of with Newt Gingrich, and that sort of virus, if you will, spread to the Senate, and we are very close to. It's almost like you know, Susan Collins is supposedly like the last holdout. Murkowski, yeah. I guess, arguably too. But even they are to the right of where even I think your typical Republican senator would have been in 1980, let's say.
Yeah, they're like Pokemon evolving. This is the second stage, and then eventually it's going to be the third, the bigger one. You know, you got that? This is all like Pokemon?
He does. He was talking about that today. He's developing the whole thing, but I never, I did my best to just
Pokemon's
sort of
cool. Like you could get into that. I mean, I think it's cool.
I certainly hope not to get into the Pokemon thing. Do we have Nomi? Is she here? Let's bring Nomi in.
She was here and then appeared.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe we can get her back. I just want to remind you, you can support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, by becoming a member, you support the free show and we give you extra content every day. Check it out. jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, shop.majorityreportradio.com. That's where you get your merch. And so close to getting those beanies. It takes a while for us to get the stuff because we want it all USA made and we want it all union made. So we're trying to thread a needle and we're trying to, you know, also make it like within reach.
Some other new merch coming as well. I got some specs from Julie the other night.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was wondering, what do you think about that? Let's just talk about it in coded language. On the cuff or on the shoulder?
I like it on the tricep.
On the tricep. Okay, fair enough. I think so too. I think the cuff is
on the tricep.
Well, like here.
Right.
Second, like right there.
Well, tricep's back here.
Well, a tricep. Yeah, you don't want it on the backwards, right? Want on this like.
Well, Julie and I had this conversation last night. I said bicep originally, and then she said tricep, and I agreed it was more tricep than bicep. So unless there's like a, I don't know.
All right.
People's triceps are different, I suppose.
Nevertheless, we're gonna have more gear coming into the shop. Also, on Nomi's show today, Hector Segura, who was a great candidate. I cannot remember where he was running in New York. I can't remember which district it was. Keila Lacey, reporter, and Edward Ungueso Jr. will be joining Nomi. Check that out. And don't forget, check out the Antifada. They are now Twitch streaming. It seems like 5 nights a week. twitch.tv/theAntifada. Matt, what's happening on the, is tonight the debut of the?
Tonight on MBS YouTube channel, our panel, the Kindler Goldman on Michael Brooks tribute to his comedy. So check, that'll be at 7.
Tuning yourself.
We
What's
can't
going
hear
on?
You at all.
Oh, really?
Fuck.
My connection's been crappy too.
He's heard Nomi swear, yeah.
Nomi, can you hear us?
We can hear you.
Hey, God, you heard me whisper that? You heard me whisper that, really?
Your audio is great. Your video.
Wow. Hang on 1 second, guys. My I blew a fuse just as I was about to start on, just to join. So I apologize, guys. All right. I'm here.
Holy moly. All right,
so who's on your show today, Nomi?
Great question. I need a breath. Way to put me on the spot as soon as I get my Wi-Fi back. I know for sure we have Akilah Lacey and Hector Aseguera, as well as Edward and Sueso, who's going to be talking about just all the stuff that's happening with, you know, technology, censorship, banning everybody. You know the jam.
Yeah, we will talk about that. Also, Daniel Besser. Bessner will be on Left Reckoning on Thursday talking about Biden's foreign policy, which, you know, out of the gate is going to be in some way made just a little bit steeper climb because of Mike Pompeo today. But we will talk about that in the fun half. All right. We will see you in the fun half. The number is 646-257-3920. I will take your IMs via our app at majorityapp.com. See you in the fun half.
RM for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are
almost says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fuck your mind!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black Africans. And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black.
You see Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black.
Come on! Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.